Business on Hot 1027 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
It's just after 6 o'clock on this Monday. Good evening, and let's spend the next hour delving into practical strategies for managing your money and improving your financial health. The day in a snapshot, the JSE down in early week trade, the Rand trading in a tight range, and the global chief executive of McDonald's says the company is preparing for a challenging 2025. Coming up on the program, the business community reflecting on the life of Tito Mboweni from policy to pilchards, the art and science of building and preserving wealth, why food insecurity should worry us all, and finding the gap in the local olive oil market. Let's start the show.
Hot Business on Hot 1027 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
Following the sudden passing of Tito Mboweni, South Africa's former finance minister and governor of the South African Central Bank, tributes have been streaming in from several quarters. Let's begin our coverage tonight with Colin Coleman, Columbia Business School adjunct professor and former Goldman Sachs Sub-Saharan Africa chief executive officer. Colin, good evening. And Tito Mboweni had a long-standing relationship with the business community. So in your opinion then, how did his policies foster or challenge the business environment in this country?
Thanks, Jeremy. Good to be on your show. I think you've got to put it in context of the tremendous transition that South Africa has gone through in his career. I met him first in 1987. Obviously, the policy of the ANC then was led by the Freedom Charter statements on nationalization. And he was very engaged with business. I was an official of the Consultative Business Movement, which is a leading group of business people engaged at that very difficult and challenging time in talking about a future post-apartheid economy. And at that stage, Tito himself was going through his transition from point of view on nationalization to a mixed economy with a focus more on the market economy. And business had to be, you know, positively and constructively engaged in that process and encouraging the move towards a market-based mixed economy. And as his progression through the negotiations into the Mandela cabinet and then later on as finance minister and governor of the Reserve Central Bank, that transition in his thinking continued. And he was always pulling business along with him, and he was in essence the godfather of ANC economic policy. So in that capacity, he was leading the dialogue with business, who were engaged right throughout that 35-year period in thinking through what the optimal economic mix was.
Colin, that transition that he was making, or that road to change in terms of economic thinking, did you get a sense that it was difficult for him to do that?
Yeah, you know, I think it was difficult for everyone, difficult for the country to come to terms with its structural legacies, the inequality, unemployment, as, you know, the economy started to, both from a monetary and a fiscal point of view, do well from 94 until 2007. We had the double whammy of Polokwane and the global financial crisis. But in that process, we were adding jobs. You know, the unemployment rate was coming down to 23%. And then post that, we saw the Zuma era lose significant currency and momentum, with effectively growth being trapped at around 1% in the post-2008 period until now, and with it, unemployment soaring to its current expanded rate of 42%, which is extraordinarily difficult. So I think he was having to deal in his capacity as a central bank governor with, you know, arresting inflation while at the same time keeping the economy going, and in his capacity as Minister of Finance, really probing into the question of what the binding constraints on the economy were and removing those constraints through structural reforms, which he was always pushing his colleagues and asking the business community for patience and support. But he had a big struggle to bring his colleagues along with him through a disciplined fiscal management process and the independence of monetary policy, which was a huge struggle. So nothing was easy. But then, you know, people who are brought into great roles of leadership have to deal with those kind of challenges.
Colin, he was also known for advocating pro-business reforms while also addressing inequality. That was a central tenet of his philosophy. Difficult to balance the needs of the private sector with those socioeconomic imperatives.
Yeah, you know, his colleague Pravin Gordhan, who tragically, and I must say it's a bit like a double hammer blow to me, two of my best and closest friends, Pravin and Tito, dying within a month of each other. I'm sort of reeling along with the country and sending my condolences to the family and the friends, and it's in essence the country as we mourn the loss of these two people. But Pravin was the person who coined the term inclusive growth. I guess Tito and Pravin had their own differences, but they were bound by the search for economic growth and for inclusive growth that brought the unemployed in. So it was very, very difficult because Tito had a golden touch with the private sector. He was very much able to engage, and he had a deep respect, the deep respect of business. But at the same time, the circumstances were enormously challenging. You know, the combination of state capture, you know, very tight monetary conditions and a narrowing fiscal space created a very difficult combination or a trifecta of circumstances.
You talk about that golden touch. He, after the Reserve Bank and after his stint in politics, then joined the boards of several organizations. What impact did his tenure there have on corporate governance and strategy in this country, do you think?
Well, just to say, I brought him in when I was CEO of Goldman Sachs for my 20-year career there. I brought him in post his retirement from the central bank and prior to the finance ministry. I brought him in as an international advisor at Goldman Sachs. He had an office there. And, I think that it was a very good moment for him to engage with these issues of governance and so on. But he was very serious intellectual, very serious about governance issues in the private sector and in the public sector. You know, he joined the Discovery Board. I must, as an aside, say, Jeremy, you know, he had a huge impact on the global central banking community. You know, I know that Alan Greenspan, Ben Bernanke, you know, a bunch of the most eminent central bankers had huge respect for the governor, as we used to call him. And in the international community, certainly in the Goldman Sachs environment, you know, he had a very strong interaction with global investors. He was very widely respected and seen as a sort of model central banker. So I think, you know, in that capacity, he could only do good with his golden touch in business.
Colin Coleman, thank you very much indeed. But there was also an eye on policy and governance as far as Mboweni was concerned. And let's turn now to Professor Raymond Parsons, professor at the Northwest University School of Business and Governance and a specialist policy advisor to Business Unity South Africa. And Professor Tito Mboweni, known for his firm stance on fiscal discipline, how do you think his policies then impacted on the country's long-term economic stability?
Well, let me start by saying that one is very saddened to hear of his unexpected passing, and one sends personal condolences to his family, because I think South Africa has too soon lost someone who I have regarded as a very dedicated public officer and economist who served South Africa, as you know, in several high capacities. Firstly, as the Minister of Labour for 5 years, as the governor of the Reserve Bank for 10 years, and as Minister of Finance for 3 years. And in all those times, he brought a very insightful and incisive mind to bear. He was robust, as we know. He certainly had a presence, and he was decisive. And so I think in the formative years after 1994, he brought these insights to bear and helped to shape several of the structures and the institutions that we now have to, in fact, work with. In fact, I always like to see him as a political economist in the good sense of the word. He always realized you're not running a seminar, you're running a country. And you've got to always do that with a high degree of insight and indeed pragmatism. And I thought that throughout his career, especially at the Reserve Bank, where I had the opportunity because I was on the board of directors of the bank while he was governor. So I really got a very close insight into how his mind worked, what his priorities were, and the extent to which he was committed to both financial and economic stability, whether he was at the Reserve Bank or subsequently when he was Minister of Finance. And you will recall his great frustration a few years ago when he warned us about the jaws of the hippo as far as government spending was concerned. So I think on all those crucial issues of economic stability, he was on the right side of the argument and the advocacy.
Well, Professor Parsons, let me pick you up on the jaws of the hippo. He was a proponent of real structural reform in state-owned enterprises. Do you think, though, that his push in that respect is going to have any sort of impact on governance and performance, given that many of them still find themselves in a very parlous state?
I think you look at the track record, I think all our ministers of finance, and in particular, of course, Pravin Gordhan, whom we also lost a few weeks ago, and of course, Tito, have all grappled with this. It's been very difficult because as Minister of Finance, they are dealing with certain economic and financial realities on the one hand. On the other hand, they are being faced with certain sort of ideological views that the state can run these things when clearly circumstances had changed to the point where restructuring was absolutely necessary, not only for the state-owned enterprises, but for other areas of our economy. And I think he, as Minister of Finance, and also as when he was governor of the Reserve Bank, he understood that there were these obstacles that had to be resolved not by him, either as governor or as Minister of Finance, but by his colleagues down the passage. And so this was this is a constant theme, and we're going to see it again at the end of this month when we have the next medium-term budget from the current minister. He's going to have to say, look, I have to get the cooperation of my colleagues in order to get the growth rate up and ensure that we don't fall into a debt trap. And I think that certainly, as far as Tito was concerned, he helped to entrench that philosophy, but it still needs to be implemented in a way that will improve our economic and our fiscal performance, and in particular, the restructuring of our state-owned enterprises.
Professor Parsons, some have criticized his approach to fiscal austerity. How would you evaluate then his balance between maintaining fiscal discipline, which is always critical, but also addressing socioeconomic challenges like poverty and unemployment, which in the South African context are perhaps more important?
Well, I think we're going to see that challenge again at the end of the month, because we haven't resolved it. I think there are two or three important issues here which he grappled with and which I think future ministers of finance will continue to have to resolve and address. The first is to get a proper balance between consumption spending and investment spending by the government, because clearly even he had a big problem with the public sector wage bill, and that problem hasn't gone away. It's still there. And we need to do more from the government side, where only the government can drive certain forms of public investment, that there is a better balance in the resources that are allocated. And secondly, there has been the issue of state capture and corruption, which has siphoned off a great deal of state money into unproductive or perhaps nefarious areas. That's something he also had to deal with. I think he found that very frustrating, and that's why he ended up really complaining about the big jaws of the hippo, which even as the National Treasury he was finding very difficult to close. And so I think that's an ongoing issue in South Africa's public finances, and it is still on the agenda of the government of national unity.
Professor, during his time as governor of the central bank, at which point you were sitting on the board, he was also advocating inflation targeting. How do you think this policy has continued to shape our monetary policy framework?
I think that's an important point, because during his sojourn as the governor of the Reserve Bank, it was an important sort of evolutionary phase in our monetary policy, including much greater transparency through the Monetary Policy Committee and so forth. But perhaps the highlight was in 2000, when we got the introduction of inflation targeting, and we agreed at the time that it should be between 3 and 6%, which is where it's been since then. Of course, it's been modified. We now aim at the 4.5 central point. And I think the important point is really twofold, or perhaps threefold. Firstly, I think it has served South Africa well to have that kind of discipline, and it's helped, of course, to give a strong degree of certainty and predictability in our monetary policy. Secondly, I think it's also important that after 24 years, understandably, we're going to review it and see what have we achieved, what should it look like in future. And that brings me to the third point, that there's now an idea that we should go for a 3% fixed target. Now, I would only take a leaf out of Tito's book again and say that when he introduced inflation targeting in 2000, there was consultation with both business and labor. Why? Well, because every time the governor speaks about inflation targeting, he refers to the pricing decisions of business and he refers to the wage demands of labor as influencing inflationary expectations. So it's very important that if we're going to revise the inflation targeting regime, that we get buy-in. We get buy-in from the key stakeholders. And I think that's also part of when one recollects how he handled inflation targeting and how he introduced it originally. He accepted that it's not a purely technical exercise. It's one in which you also need to get buy-in from the key stakeholders, such as business and labor. And that's also part of his legacy.
Professor Raymond Parsons, thank you very much indeed.
Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.